Hi, and welcome to the iPhone Life podcast. I'm Donna Schill, editor-in-chief at iPhone Life.
And I'm Cullen Thomas, senior instructor at iPhone Life, filling in for David.
Thanks for joining today, Cullen.
It's always my pleasure to be on the podcast.
Today, we are going to be talking about iOS 26. Both Cullen and I have the public beta on our iPhones. I've had mine for about 2 months because I had the developer for a while and now the public. You've had it for at least a week, right?
A week and a half, yeah.
Yeah. So we are going to share all of our thoughts on iOS 26 with you to help you decide whether you should get the beta on your device and also just to give you a preview of what's to come, because September is coming to all of our iPhones, except for the ones that it's not, which we'll also go over compatibility in this episode. As usual, we also have great apps, lots of cool gear, and everything new in the iOS world, so stick around for a great episode. First, we have a message from our sponsor. Incogni has been a sponsor with us for a while, and we wanted to take a minute to tell you about what they do. So if you're interested in reducing the number of spam calls you get, basically spam emails, text calls, all of that, you are going to want to check out Incogni. Both of us have an account. We've been using Incogni for a while. And basically how it works is your personal data, unfortunately, gets onto different data broker sites, and that information is sold and shared, and it just ends up where tons of people who you don't want to be able to contact you and get your personal data can. So you can take things into your own hands by signing up for a data removal service like Incogni, and Incogni is one that we feel really, really good about. They will go and request your information to be taken down from data broker sites, and they're legally required to do so. So it's something that they can actually, there's some muscle behind. They don't just request and then nothing happens. And you can actually go when you have an account and see all of the data broker sites where your information's been removed. I have like over 200 removals since I signed up and have noticed a big decrease in the amount of calls. We actually have different of our customers who called in and been like, thank you so much for telling me about Incogni. It's changed my life. So for a sponsor of ours, it's one we genuinely feel good sharing with all of you.
Yeah, I've tried a few different data removal services that will go out to the internet and find all the different data brokers who have hoarded your information and tell them to delete it. I like Incogni. I genuinely prefer it. So it's nice that they are also sponsoring us. They do reduce the amount of spam that you get, although they may not do so right away. So it's kind of important to know that this isn't like a spam blocker service. It's sort of cutting off spam at the roots. Like, it makes it so that the people who send you spam can't find your address to begin with. But if they already if they're already sending you messages, they're going to keep doing that until they lose their record and they can't find you anymore. So it's a really cool way to do it, but it's a little slow. So you wouldn't want to sign up and expect that the next day you're going to not get any more spam calls. But it's powerful. Like, this is the way to tackle the problem at its root.
And the thing that we bring up spam calls because it's a nuisance and also can be harmful if you fall for something that's like a scam through one of these calls. But it also is a great sort of forward protection against identity theft and some more serious issues like your information being bought and sold on the dark web. You can prevent those things from happening in the future by signing up now, or at least help prevent it. It's also not a guarantee.
It's a mitigation. It's a really good step to take, I think.
So if you go to iPhoneLife.com/Incogni and enter in the code iPhoneLife, you can claim 55% off now. So that's iPhoneLife.com/Incogni.
Do it. Protect yourself.
Yes. So let's talk about questions from our readers. We have our Insider community. That's our premium educational service. And we get questions here and there from them. So Cullen, do you want to go ahead and share this latest question?
Yeah, I'm going to share what might be a little bit of an unusual question for us. Usually our questions are really have really specific, clean, like set this setting or delete this app sort of answers. But I got one as a reply to one of my security newsletters. I write the Security Friday newsletter for iPhone Life. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably get it. And a few weeks ago, I got a reply to my newsletter And I'm going to read it to you. We're not going to identify. We're going to, names have been changed to protect the innocent. Yeah. So here's the question. A good friend of mine has fallen for romance scams a number of times. She's older, lonely, not in great physical health, and is the primary account holder for her family's bank and investment accounts. And even though she is falling for these scams, her family and bank have been unsuccessful in getting her to relinquish control. She gave away $40,000 to one scammer and was about to send $60,000 more when her family realized what was happening and intervened. They were unable to recover $40,000 and took her computer away for a little while. She has it back now and is currently sending money, though in smaller amounts, to several scammers. It's incredibly sad but also maddening because she is smart about almost everything except this, yet knows enough to ensure that her control of the accounts is not threatened.
This is a really good question and
this
a tricky one.
Tough question.
Yeah.
So I want to address this question on three levels. The first is from a purely technical standpoint. You could, in theory, cancel someone's internet access or try to lock down their network or something like that. But in practice, that is illegal unless you have the legal authority to make decisions on someone else's behalf. So it's not going to be legal for you to try to, like, technically lock down this person's devices or accounts or something like that. So there isn't really a technical solution to this problem. You can, of course, prevent scams with technical solutions like using Incogni or using your VPN and using a privacy-preserving web browser. Those sorts of technical solutions might prevent you from making contact with these scammers to begin with. But once you have, they won't stop you from sending money. Then on a second level, there's like an educational element. You can prevent people from getting caught by romance scammers by educating about romance scams. If you're in the first steps of a romance scam, somebody's just made contact with you, then you're still skeptical enough to use the knowledge that you've gained from a security newsletter or from conversations with friends to protect yourself and not get drawn in.
Yeah.
But there's a limit to what education can do. So I spoke with a social worker, a friend of mine, who's very wise, about how to intervene in a case where somebody's really gone down the rabbit hole this way. And what my social worker friend said has really been kind of rewiring my brain and making me think about the world in a different way. They said, if somebody is making a decision, it's because that they are getting something that they need out of that decision. And a lot of the times when people are in these really risky relationships, they know it's risky. They know that there's red flags, and they're intentionally ignoring them because they're getting something important out of the relationship that they can't get another way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give people advice that they don't have the resources to accept, in other words, if you tell people how to do something, but they don't have the resources to do something different than what they're already doing, then you're
either emotional. When you buy resources, you mean like
emotional, money, social.
Yeah.
If they don't have the resources to do something different than what they're already doing, then they're not going to change their behavior. They're just going to be ashamed. You're not going to change what they're doing. You're just shaming them. So the thing that you have to do when somebody's really deep like this is you have to give them the resource that they need, the thing that they're getting out of this relationship that they can't get any other way.
Hmm.
And that is that's a tall order. Because in this case, we're talking about someone who's probably very lonely, and that contact with the scammers is giving them a sense of purpose. It's giving them a sense of agency. It's making them feel connected and powerful. And unless you can address those needs, which you probably can't, it's going to be really hard to talk this person out of that. Now, I'm not saying you can't, but it does mean that you've got to be willing to really provide them with a lot of social resource.
And support.
And support.
And part of the reason that we wanted to address this question is just because romance scams are actually really prevalent.
They're huge numbers.
A lot of people do fall for them. And we kind of wanted to bring it up to not shame people because a lot of them are really convincing and they're getting better and better.
I almost got scammed a couple weekends ago. They're very smart. They do a really good job most of the time in presenting themselves as as interesting. And, you know, if you're well-educated and skeptical, and if you have good social, like a lively social life, then you're going to be pretty skeptical of most of them. But if any of those things is not true, then yes, these romance scams are very powerful. They're very effective. They're making billions of dollars off of mostly pretty lonely people. It's horrifying. And I hope that you can kind of stay educated about the latest scams. That's why we do our Security Friday newsletter. And I hope that you can stay sympathetic to your friends and family members when they are affected by them, because it is your connection to your friends that then may provide them a lifeline.
Yeah, thanks for covering this. And for all of you who are not signed up for the security newsletter, I wanted to take a minute to tell you about the newsletters that iPhone Life does. So if you go to iPhoneLife.com/dailytip, that's where you can go to sign up for our free daily newsletter and also our Security Friday newsletter. So the daily newsletter is where you can go to get a 1 minute tip every day that teaches you something cool you can do with your iPhone. The whole idea behind it is that we know people live really busy lives, and it's really great to get an iPhone education in just 1 minute a day and learn something kind of fun and exciting that keeps you hooked into the Apple ecosystem with very little effort, and it's completely free. So you can go to iPhoneLife.com/dailytip to sign up. Now, if you want more, we also offer iPhone Life Insider, and that's our premium subscription really for Apple enthusiasts who want to get the most out of their Apple devices. We cover not just the iPhone, but also your Mac, your Apple Watch, and your iPad. We have live courses running every month. Colin's our main head instructor, so Colin's teaching sessions every single week on something cool and exciting. Right now, Colin's teaching Apple passwords.
Yeah, we've got a live class starting next week for insiders on the passwords app. Mm-hmm. Apple built in a password manager, and it's actually a really good one. When they first rolled it out a year ago with iOS 18, I was a little skeptical, and I was telling people, maybe wait a little while if you're already using a password manager. Keep the one you're using. But now we're running out of excuses. The Apple's password manager is free with the purchase of your device, and it's got a lot of great features. So we're really exploring the Passwords app and all of the cool things you can do with it in our Passwords app live course.
My favorite thing about Apple Passwords is just that how effortless it is, since it's built into your device. It kind of like starts collecting passwords even without you knowing it. But in this course, you can really get the most out of it and make sure you're using it really well across all your devices. And now, even if you use more than just Apple devices, you can use Apple passwords because there's Windows compatibility.
Yeah, it's it works with every web browser now. It used to only work with Safari, but yeah, works with any web browser.
That stopped a lot of us in the
past. It even works on Windows. We're running out of excuses not to love this program. It's actually a really, and it's got a bunch of hidden features that, while it looks very simple on the outside, there's actually a bunch of cool stuff buried in there.
So if you're interested in Apple Passwords, whether you have a current password manager or even are already using Apple Passwords, I suggest checking this out because you'll get a lot more information to make sure you're really using best practices in password management, which is very important for your personal security. Also, if you are interested in our security course, we have that on demand, and Colin goes over a lot of best practices for things like avoiding scams in general, romance scams being one of them, which we were just talking about. So if in general you want to make sure you have your bases covered when it comes to security, Insider is a great resource.
Yeah. Get your bases covered and your covers based.
Yeah. I'm like, oh man, sleep deprivation with a newborn. Anyway, go to iPhoneLife.com/podcast discount. You can get 30% off Insider right now just for being a podcast listener. We also have a 10% extra discount always running for seniors, veterans, service personnel, also teachers and students. So iPhoneLife.com/podcast discount. All right, I'm done talking about our offerings, I promise. So let's talk about our tip this week. You've got a great security tip picked out for us. Colin, you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, so our tip of the week is to prevent apps from tracking your phone. So apps that are installed on your phone can track your activity across every website you visit, in theory. But Apple has built in a feature to turn that off. And they've even set it up so that it asks every time and you can do it. So let's go through the set. If you open your settings app, you tap on privacy and security, and then you tap on tracking. In there, you can just toggle off allow apps to request to track. And what this will mean is that the apps will not be able to even ask you, if they're allowed to, track your activity with an identifier. And the way it normally works is the app assigns a little numeric, a little code to you, and then that code is shared with advertising partners who might run other apps or websites or whatever, and then everywhere you go, that code kind of de-anonymizes you. You could be using a VPN, you could be using email maskings, but because that code is there that was added by the app knows it can identify you by that code, and the website can identify you by that code, and so on. But if you turn this off, then your apps will not have that ability and your browsing will remain anonymous.
So are there any instances before toggling this off where you would want this to be on?
If you, no, it's not for you. It's for the advertisers.
There are no certain apps that you would like need that in order to get the functionality of the app.
I guess if you're someone who just really wants your ads to know exactly what you've been doing lately, which is a
person... It feels like it's always happening anyway, even without helping them
say. I think that the Google and Meta titans of the world have been claiming that such people exist and that it is desirable to have highly targeted ads. But I strongly suspect that there are, in fact, no people in the world who want highly targeted ads this way.
Yeah, like that you just like think about something and then suddenly there's an ad about it. It feels like that's happening.
Have a conversation with a friend about something and then start seeing ads for that thing. Like nobody actually wants that. I don't think that's a real thing that we want.
It's a pretty spooky feeling. Yeah, so that's good to know because, you know, apps can also track your location. And for things like Apple Maps or Google Maps, if you're using that, you do need to keep it on in order for that app to work. So that's good to know. This is different.
Yeah, this is different. This one, you just want to probably turn that off.
Okay. Well, that's a great easy tip for the day. Thank you, Colin. We have some comments from listeners. I wanted to read a couple out to you from previous episodes. This wasn't the last episode. For our WWDC podcast, which is Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference that happened in June, we recorded a live podcast afterwards just to talk about what we saw at the event. And I complained a lot about Siri. At the time, we were expecting that Apple would sort of have to answer for the fact that they were going to give us an AI-powered Siri with iOS 18, and then that never materialized.
They announced it, and it is still not here. I think there's actually a class action lawsuit about that.
The thing that bothered me about this the most is that it was kind of breaking from Apple's past. Usually Apple waits longer to enter an arena once they've really perfected a feature. And so a lot of times you have to wait for it, but then when it comes, it's great. Yeah. But they wait to announce it also. And now I'm like, wait a second, is Apple gonna start announcing things that we may get a year or two later? I don't love that, especially because a lot of our listeners and also just, you know, people in general went out and bought iPhone 16s because these features were announced that then never came to be. So
yeah,
we have a lot of people I know upset about that. So here, that's the context for this. Rod S. wrote in, "Hi, I agree with the Siri disappointment. I'm sure glad I didn't upgrade and probably won't this year without a Siri upgrade. It seems like they should be able to upgrade Siri's intelligence anyway, as Siri is not intelligent at all." Hot take.
Hot take.
Then they could add on.
It's not. I think that's actually fair in a very literal sense of the term intelligence. Siri does not have intelligence. Siri is a verbal interface that accepts specific commands.
Yeah.
It is not a thinking being. It does not apply anything that could be qualified as intelligence.
Yeah. Rod says, another Siri gripe is with CarPlay. I can ask for something that doesn't need graphics, and she says she can't show me while I'm driving. If there's nothing to show, it's so frustrating. I've had so many times in the car where I'm like, I won't even say it because I don't want everyone at home to have their personal assistant fire up, but to try to ask for something 5 times in a row and not have it work. That also happens with my HomePod a lot, and it's really annoying.
It's so frustrating. So
I was thanking you for writing in, but I also just wanted to take a minute to talk about Siri, what we think about this.
Yeah, we're at a real kind of inflection moment, I think, regards to that voice assistant
trend. Yeah.
Because voice assistants are definitely transitioning into chatbots, right?
AI-powered chatbots.
It's going from a verbal interface that can accept a limited set of commands to an AI, a Gen AI-powered chatbot that can have a conversation with you and remembers the things you've said and therefore can interpret your commands much more organically. And everyone has done this except Apple.
And it would be so nice if Apple did, because Apple would presumably do it in a way with that would have better privacy protections.
Yeah, they
which is a real concern.
Positioned themselves to do that. But they also seem to be very cautious about rolling out a chatbot functionality. And I have to admit that I have some respect for how cautiously they've been playing it. There's been a lot of hype on the generative AI advertising front, and it seems like Apple is just playing the long game. So I don't know if they're going to actually...
I hope that's what's happening. And I think you're probably right. I think to me, like, I'm kind of like, I feel like they need to, they can't be like ignoring what's happening with AI. But if they have just a more thoughtful, measured plan, then I also have respect for that.
I think it's certain that they do have a more thoughtful, measured plan. The question is whether that's the right play. I mean, they're under so much pressure right now to make Siri into a chatbot. I mean, there's a lawsuit about them having announced that they were going to do that and then having failed to do so.
Yeah.
And then there's, on top of that, there's just investor pressure and purchase pressure, and everyone wants them to do it. So even if they don't, even if they don't feel that the technology is mature, they may be pressured into rolling it out.
Yeah. You know, and something that I didn't mention was the rumors about why Apple hasn't released it is that it turned out to be a much more complex task, and they ran into a lot of problems in development. And so that's why we're not seeing it. And that's just what made me more troubled in terms of like why they're stalling on this. But if they're, you know, I think there are a lot of concerns around the AI rush, and that we're not being that thoughtful about the consequences down the road with AI. And so I feel it is possible that Apple has that in mind and just wants to make sure they're really thinking through all the implications of what, you know, their chatbots could do before they just kind of release it, you know?
I mean, I think it's certain that that's what they're doing, because that's what they've always done. When they entered the market with the iPhone, there had been smartphones for a decade, and everyone was very uncertain that a touchscreen smartphone was even going to sell. They're always the sit back and wait until the technology is mature strategists, and I think that's consistent with what they're doing. But the real question is, are we going to get it in September?
Yeah, my thinking is no, probably, but you know, this is a good sort of setting the stage for our iOS 26 conversation, because Apple did release a lot of really practical, useful AI features that we're going to get into that have sort of simmered, like tamed my rage about the lack of the AI Siri for now, because I do think there are a lot of things that are really helpful in daily life. Siri, I still find to be frustrating, and that I wish Siri could do more as well. So I'm on the same page with Rod about that. But, you know, we'll get more into what Apple is doing on the AI front in a few minutes. So Rita also wrote in. I just wanted to read out her comment. We had an episode recently with Cullen and David where they talked about the possible tariffs. A lot of people have been like, what's going to happen with the prices of iPhones and Apple products in general with all the tariffs lately? we don't still have an answer to that because it's like change. It's a constantly changing, evolving situation. But Rita wrote in response to that episode, I was on the fence about buying my first Apple Watch. And because of the tariffs and the havoc brought upon complicated supply chains, I purchased one last week. Glad I did, Rita. So far, we haven't seen any big changes in Apple product prices. We'll see what happens this September. Hopefully, fingers crossed, they won't be more expensive because already Apple products are very expensive.
Yeah, we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't have any special insight into that, I'm afraid.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into iOS 26.
Okay, yeah. So first impressions on iOS. So first of all, iOS 26 should be iOS 19, but they've changed the naming convention. So just to get you caught up, if you haven't been paying attention. So the next operating system update for your iPhone and iPad and Apple TV and Apple Watch and Mac and all of the rest is going to be named for the year. Rather than that, for the year that it's active, it'll be coming out in 2025, but it'll be the operating system for 2026. So they're calling it OS 26. I think that's a good
move. Like car manufacturers do.
Yeah. It's the 77 model, right?
And it's across all Apple OSs. So it's going to be iOS, iPadOS, watchOS 26, and macOS. So that's kind of nice.
Not the most exciting news, but useful to know.
Yeah, useful to know. I know when they first announced that, I was like, oh no, is this what's supposed to be exciting about this? But no, it's not.
So what were your first impressions?
First of all, in the show notes, we're going to link to more about the OS and also which devices it's compatible with. So you can check that there to make sure that your iPhone will update to iOS 26. But my first impressions are, you know, I was wanting to see what Apple would do with AI. And at first I was like, oh no, they didn't do much. But within a couple weeks of using iOS 26, I found myself really attached to all of the updates that they did do. And I found them to be practical and helpful. And even though I was dealing with some glitches and bugs because I was using the developer beta, I found myself not wanting to downgrade because I didn't want to lose those features. So I think that says a lot. That says that Apple did provide value with iOS 26, even if it's not like the flashiest of updates. Oh, and a lot of that is with things like just better design. And also there are a few key features like Hold Assist is cool. There's also like polls and messages, which has been fun. But a lot of it is a little more subtle than that. It's the redesign that Apple did with Liquid Glass, which we'll talk about in a second, that actually does just make better use of your screen real estate. And the menus are just more intuitive and helpful.
Yeah.
So I think it's well done.
The biggest advertised feature of the iOS 26 announcement is a redesign. So significant change to the way it looks and some navigational elements, but mostly just the way it looks. You won't be lost navigating your iPhone. They didn't reorganize everything, but they did change the style of it very significantly. And I'm always a little skeptical of the need to do that kind of thing. But in this case, they were talking about how great so they called it Liquid Glass, which is across the board, they tried to create this aesthetic quality that everything is made of glass so that your background warps as the glass passes over it. And the icons have these sort of glass frames. When I heard about this, I was like, that doesn't seem important at all. Why would we make such a big deal about that? And it's honestly not that different. But it's true, Donna, I think what you said, that it makes better use of the screen size. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of funny because it has been a complaint of mine for a while that you set your home screen to some picture that you love. It'll be your pet or your family or your kid or something. And then it's covered in app icons and you can't see it.
Yeah.
With the Liquid Glass, you kind of can see it. And this is just one case where across the board, elements that used to block other things now don't completely block them.
But you can still see them.
But you can still see them. And it's not confusing.
Which is hard to pull off, too.
Yeah, they just did a good job. I don't think that this is a big like Liquid Glass is like, you're going to run out and buy an iPhone or something because of this update. But I think they did a good job.
Yeah. And this is like, I'm actually kind of surprised to have such a positive report here, because this is coming from when WWDC happened. There was a funny meme of like the app icons that looked just slightly fuzzier than before. And it's then like, them being like, fire everyone. Yeah. And I was like cracking up because it was like, wow, this everyone else is coming up with these like really flashy AI features. Say what you want about whether like that's a good idea or not, but still like just a slightly fuzzier icon. That's what you've got for us. It was just funny.
But it's not all they've got for us. They've actually got a bunch of cool features. One that I've been using all the time is an upgrade to visual intelligence.
Yes.
Where you can now with a screenshot, when you take a screenshot on your phone, it like pops up a preview of the screenshot. And right away, Apple Intelligence will analyze that screenshot and tell you what it's a picture of. And you can, so you can be like, screenshot a piece of clothing in an e-commerce app and mm-hmm. be like, use this visual intelligence to find variations on this at other, like it just, it identifies stuff right away and it's built right into the screenshot. So it's just so useful. I've been using it constantly.
And so that's something that I've been using a lot too. And it's like, it'll just, I found cool things like that'll be popping up a lot. Like it's just smarter suggestions of things you could do with your screenshots.
Yeah.
And that's an AI feature, by the way. And that's right. One that a lot of Google phones have something similar that's come out recently. So like Apple is keeping up in this way. And I think arguably their version with visual intelligence is better.
And much more private. So like you can screenshot, you can be browsing Etsy and screenshot something and then use visual intelligence to look it up, secure in the knowledge that that lookup is not going to end up in Google's advertising profile. And then you're not going to see ads for that thing you screenshot all across the internet. Like
that's nice.
It's nice, actually. It's nice. It's actually a big deal to me, I guess, as a privacy and security advocate.
Yeah. Back to Liquid Glass. I just wanted to say a couple more things about the redesign. They have a new home screen designer that uses the redesign as well. And you can change the size of your clock on it. And the images are, it has a 3D effect. It's called like spatial scenes. And so I've been having fun with pictures of my daughter or dog where you can like, as you tilt it, it moves and it has a 3D effect. So between the screensaver and the sort of glass bubble design, it'll remind you a lot of Vision OS if you're someone who has an Apple Vision Pro or if you've just had a chance to like watch the demos online or anything. And Vision OS overall, Cullen and I both think was a big flop. Like you wrote a funny op-ed about how it was, it's a look into the future and the future sucks.
Yeah, it was not ready for prime time. I like that is a glaring example of a case where Apple went against their normal policy of really waiting and seeing on a technology.
Yeah, it was like so heavy that you had a headache within 10 minutes and it was like having a computer strapped to your face. It was really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I should try it out again. There've been a few OS updates. I bet it's a little bit more interesting now.
So there are updates, and I was going to say, even though I did not like a lot of it, I did really like the look of the operating system. Like
transparent operating
system. I just didn't
system.
Like having it on my face, but it was really cool how all the screens sort of like overlaid in this way that felt transparent. It felt really clean and serene. It was really nice. And so now your phone feels a little like that.
Yeah.
And I've been finding myself enjoying that.
Yeah, it definitely, I think they even said in the announcement that it was inspired by Vision OS. And one of the coolest things about the Vision was its OS had a lovely design, very transparent design. Mm-hmm. So enough about Apple Glass, about Liquid Glass. Probably the least impactful update. There are a bunch of features that they've rolled out. Their OS 26 includes some really super useful updates to Messages and Phone. So the Phone app has been completely redesigned. And it includes two features that I'm so stoked about. One is call screening. Now, it already had call screening to some degree. Like somebody, you could listen. If somebody were leaving a voicemail, then you could see the transcription of the voicemail, and then you could call them back. That's traditional call screening. With the new upgrade, you can see a transcription of their voicemail while they're leaving it and then pick up the phone without having to call them back. So you just pick up the phone once they start leaving a message. Like call screening used to work in the 80s when we had tape cassette recorders. This is a great feature. I love this. I've already been using it.
I've used that quite a bit. And then, of course, Hold Assist. I've unfortunately have had to use a lot because I feel like I've been just doing a lot of kind of like busy work calls, getting different accounts set up, probably like health and daughter related things where, you know, the elevator music chimes in and your phone recognizes it and says, hey, do you want to put this call on hold? So it's sort of like someone puts you on hold and you can turn around and be like, nope, I'm putting you on hold, actually.
You're not putting me on hold. I'm putting you on hold.
The only problem with it is that sometimes these like elevator music situations, it'll stop every once in a while and have a human voice be like, give some information, even though you're still on hold. And
thanks
so
we're calling.
Yeah. You'll have a false alarm of being like, oh, the representative's here to talk to me. No, never mind. It's not. But still, it's nice like to not have an hour of elevator music playing for like anyone who happens to be in the room for you.
So this feature, how it works is it, like Donna is implying, it notices, the phone can detect when you're on hold. And it does so using its Apple Intelligence, like it's analyzing the audio. It's analyzing the audio to detect elevator music. So it's not going to be a perfect fit. Like it may get it wrong sometimes. But when it detects that you're on hold, it pops up this little notification. And you can then, if you say yes, that I'm on hold, then it just puts the call on hold for you too. And you could walk away and do something else, carry your phone with you, of course. And when someone picks up, it then pops up and like makes your phone ring too.
Yeah, and it's so cool.
Yeah, great, great idea.
It's one of those things I feel like should always have been there, and I'm so glad it is now. And yeah, like that's an example of one of the features where I'm like, I don't want to live without this feature.
I don't want to live without this feature. And one for me that's just like such a lifesaver is there's a feature on the phone app that's been around for a little while where if a contact is not in your Rolodex, then the phone doesn't ring. They go straight to voicemail.
Yeah.
And this is great for scam calls because anybody who's calling you from an unknown number goes straight to voicemail. They're adding that to the Messages app. So incoming text messages that come from numbers or addresses outside of your contacts cards go into their own folder and you don't have to see them. And I get,
that feature?
Oh, I get between 10 to 15 texts that are either political or scammers or some combination of tech. I don't know how my number got on all these lists, but I get 10 to 15 a day.
Wow.
And deleting them was just such a headache. And now they all just go into a folder. I don't have to think about it. Every now and then it catches one of my TOTP codes or something like that that I need,
but you can still go
in there and get it.
You do. So you get a little number icon in the upper right corner of the Messages app that shows you, like it indicates that there's something there to look at. Like, but I actually turned this off because I was missing things. Like there are people trying to get in touch with me that I wanted to be able to get in touch with me and I didn't see it. So, you know, so with some of these things, you just have to fiddle with it and make sure it works for your use.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those things like most people probably will like.
Yeah.
I just happen to be lazy about going and checking the other folder.
or like pinning incoming phone numbers as being relevant. So that's another feature that it added. If you go into that Messages area that's for unknown messages, and you tap on one of those, it'll ask you, do you recognize this number? Do you want to add it to a contact?
So you just have to like do that.
And you just do that. Because if it's like from a, you know, some big company or medical thing, they're going to call you from numbers you don't recognize. But as long as you pin all those numbers, that should stop happening.
I noticed it seemed like my phone was better about suggesting, like being able to tell who it was that was trying to contact me. Also in group messages, there have been a couple of things like that where I don't know like really what changed there, but Apple seemed to like know who was trying to contact me and suggest their name, which is maybe a little bit disturbing, but also nice. What do you think of the phone and messages app redesigns? Like phone particularly, I'm still having a little bit of like a learning curve of knowing where everything is.
Yeah, the phone. So I said that they mostly did not reorganize everything, but the exception to that is the phone app.
The phone app's a little confusing, to be honest.
They completely redesigned the phone app, and it is a little confusing.
I think it's favorites. Yeah. Like, you know, the messages where you can have all your favorite people tiled at the top. The phone app now has that too, which I like.
But it also like lists all your incoming and outgoing calls, even the missed ones in the same like register. Yeah. And the voicemails are in there too. So it's, I don't know, it's just a little bit confusing.
And then there are like multiple search fields, so it's hard to tell if what you're doing. It's a little bit confusing at times.
I expect we'll have to cover the phone app very carefully in our iOS 26 live course on the to make sure people don't get lost in there.
Yeah. I do really like their new messages features. The polls is one that, you know, a lot of different like WhatsApp or different apps like have been able to do things like this before. But iMessage is by far what I use the most. And so this is really nice. And I group message all the time. So something like my upcoming family vacation, we're trying to figure out, you know, pizza orders, things like that. And you can just create a little poll and not have to be tracking like 10 different people's answers saying the kind that they want.
Yeah. Polls are great. Very useful for a lot of different things. It's nice that Apple's rolled them into the Messages app natively.
They also have some fun backgrounds. You can add photos to your message backgrounds. Not groundbreaking, but I think live translation's worth us talking about for a minute because that one, that's another AI feature that's really cool.
And they've put it in everywhere. So live translation is now in messages, it's in FaceTime, it's in phone. So you can have a call with someone who is speaking a different language and it will translate what they are saying live on your screen in front of you.
That's amazing.
We are living in the future. This is like Star Trek technology.
Well, it's really like, I feel like that's one that's going to really break down barriers for people in being able to have like closer relationships with people who speak different languages, whether that's like distant family members or, you know, anything. So that one's really nice. And, you know, there's a lot of translation tools out there, but they're ones you've had to, there's just more steps, whereas this just happens for you.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
And it's right there in the interface. You just tap a button and up it pops. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
And live translation through Apple's Translate app is pretty good. It's not perfect, of course, but it does a pretty good job. I've used it a few times on vacation, like live. Like I need to tell a taxi driver exactly where I'm going or something like that. And it can solve the problem. It's always a little awkward to pull out your phone and narrate to it and then have it play it back for someone else. But doing that in a FaceTime call is pretty cool.
I agree. Now, Maps has a feature that I feel like is a bit controversial. There's preferred routes and visited places now. So basically, places you've been are going to be popping up on your device and it's tracking where you go. I mean, already it was, but for privacy concerns, for people who want more privacy, I feel like this feature, it's one of those convenience versus privacy.
So Google Maps has had for a long time your location history. So so you could go into Google Maps if you were using Google Maps and like figure out exactly which restaurant you were at 6 years ago on a trip to Chicago by seeing every step you took and every turn you took for the last 20 years in Google Maps. And I have done this. There was one time when I was wandering around Chicago and I found my way to a theater and then like 3 years later, I was trying to find that same theater again. And the only way I could find it was to go back through my Google location history. And then I was horrified by how much detail the Google location history had on me. So I deleted it all. your location history like this, it really is extremely revealing. You would not want that to fall into the wrong hands. But until now, Apple has not done that at all. So there was, while Apple Maps was tracking your location, they weren't retaining a record of it in the past. So it was transitory. They might know that you had planned a route to get to someplace, but they're not like ceaselessly recording the location of your phone and retaining those records forever. Well, with OS 26, you have the option to turn that on. And Apple, with their commitment to privacy, has made it a toggle that you turn on, not one that you turn off.
I like that.
Which I appreciate. It definitely is useful. Like, if you're going on some trip and you're going to visit a lot of different places and you turn it on, like, remembering which restaurant you went to, remembering, right? Like, that stuff can be very helpful. But it's
and
definitely
preferred routes too. That's super useful.
Oh, preferred routes is great.
I mean, I'm definitely, like, for the record, I'm turning these on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I feel like it's convenient enough that I will use it. What about you?
A location tracking, I will be leaving off, except maybe under certain circumstances.
Okay.
I don't like the idea of leaving a permanent record of everywhere that I go. And I think that it should be the default that we are not doing that.
I wanted to talk to you about this one because I was curious, from a security standpoint, how bad do you think it is to keep that on?
I would say that you don't have to have something to hide to want to turn this off. I think that you could...
That's a good distinction, because it's not like what comes to mind with keeping this off is that if you're doing like shady stuff. But
you don't have to be doing anything shady. So scenario that actually happens relatively commonly is that you are secondary to someone who is having legal trouble of some kind. It could maybe a divorce, or maybe it could be civil, right? It doesn't have to be criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And then records are going to be subpoenaed about different activities. Somebody says you're somewhere you weren't, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you could try to say, well, maybe if I am never doing anything shady, then having these records would protect me. But it will never protect you to have these kinds of records. It always ends up being that they are used against you, not for you. So, because it's possible to fake them, so that people tend to see them as proof positive, but never as proof negative.
I see.
It's just like, as a default assumption, your privacy is protected by not retaining data. Your privacy is protected, and your friend's privacy and your family's privacy is protected by not retaining data. Data is toxic. Get rid of it if you can.
I will say that, like, since editing the security newsletter and, you know, seeing all these stories and talking to you, that it has changed my view a bit, where I used to be sort of like, well, I have nothing to hide, I'm not that big of a target, like that kind of thing. And you realize that there's all these implications that you're not aware of. Like, you can be a very open book kind of person and still want to protect your privacy, you know?
Yeah, you don't have to have done anything wrong to want to protect your privacy. Privacy is a resource that is your freedom is dependent on your privacy. Your privacy and your freedom are deeply connected. And really, it's important to protect your privacy for the sake of everyone around you. And it's easy when you are living in a completely trustworthy world to not worry about it, to think, oh, it's fine if there's all these Google profiles on me or whatever. But as soon as you start to question the trustworthiness of any aspect of the world that you're living in, you start to wonder, wait a minute, aren't I safer if this isn't out there?
Yeah.
Right. As soon as you have a stalker, right, or your friend has a stalker or something, suddenly you're like, wait a minute, maybe I don't want my address on the internet. Maybe I don't want every movement I've ever made recorded,
yeah,
in a place that it could potentially be accessed by a stalker, right? Like,
yeah, or you learn about like romance scams where it's like, there are a lot of kind of people doing these things that are in desperate like a lot of these romance scam kind of mills, I guess,
right,
are people like who are just like desperate to make money in this sort of shitty way, you know? So it's like,
or have no choice. They've been human trafficked into a position, right, where if they don't execute scams, they will be hurt.
Yeah.
And that's like, it is good to trust the world we live in and to trust the people that we surround ourselves with. But there's a saying in Algeria, they say, trust in God, but tie your camel. Like,
yeah,
we can trust the world we live in, but we should be aware that there are steps that we should be taking to protect ourselves. So I'm going to be leaving my maps visited places off.
Thanks for tying this back into the conversation at hand.
Yeah, but I would also say that like preferred routes is great. So if you're so what preferred routes does is if you take the same route regularly, but the default route is not the one you want to take. So like you're on your commute, you prefer to go on a different highway than what the default is. And you just have to do that every single time. Now you can set a preferred route and it will remember it. So even though it maybe should have been that way all along, preferred routes is great. You're going to want to probably use those.
But yeah, visited places, maybe think twice about. All right. So would you recommend to people that they get the iOS 26 public beta? We're into August now. There's only a month left before you could get the shipping version. So what are your thoughts on that?
I would personally say wait until September.
At this point, wait.
Yeah, it's just not only that far off.
A few weeks now.
Yeah.
I will say my phone has had some annoying bugs.
Yes.
It's like it is not I've had to restart free. My phone probably like a few times a week just because something was glitchy and not working as it should. I've been stuck in certain views or menus that are not supposed to be that way. Like, catastrophic, but it's annoying.
I've had some catastrophic bugs. I've had things where like my password manager stopped working. I've had things where like I got logged out of stuff that I had no business being logged out of. There's been like a bunch of weird bugs.
We've had people with like their banking apps won't work when they like really needed access to their banking app.
Don't put beta software on your phone that's your primary phone. Just don't do that. Definitely, they've been pretty good lately about ironing out all the bugs before the public release.
Yeah.
So I would wait. I would not recommend putting the beta on your device until September when it's not a beta anymore.
All right, so let us know. We're going to make our question of the week. What features of iOS 26 are you the most excited to try? Also, you've heard our advice, but the choice is yours. Let us know if you are going to try the public beta or not and why. Email us at podcast@iPhoneLife.com. We always love hearing from all of you. And thank you so much for joining us this week. This has been a fun episode. Thanks, Cullen, for co-hosting with me.
It's always a pleasure to be on the podcast and to get to chat through all the latest news. Insiders, stick around.
Yes. Bye, everyone.
Cheers.